They're like, I bet you feel good wearing the valiant cloak of the protection as you sit behind the comfort of your computer. And I was like, what a great series of words to say. I don't want to take accountability for the fact my products suck. And then after that, they blocked me.
Profits have hit a record high, and you've all worked overtime to make it happen. So it's time to be rewarded with a corporate pizza party. The podcast taking you inside the highs and lows of corporate America, hosted by Dan Space, Farah Sharghi, and Mike Petito. We couldn't afford bonuses this year, but sit back and enjoy the next best thing.
Welcome back, everybody, for another corporate pizza party. Today, we are going to talk about a topic that I think is really important to a lot of you. We're going to dive into salary negotiation and some thoughts and some tips, including, you know, from Dan, who literally wrote the book on compensation. So, you know, we're excited to hear from him. We're also going to get into Dan being a goddamn tornado of drama and what that means for him. And before we do all that, let's start with Farah, though. Farah, tell us about yourself.
Good. Hello, Mike and Dan. Hello, everybody. I'm Farah Sharghi. I live in San Francisco. I am a technical recruiter and career coach, but I'm coming to you live from my parents' home in Texas because it is Persian New Year. It was the first day of spring this week. So happy Nowruz, happy spring, everybody. My allergies are going a little berserk. So if I sound a little strange, I do apologize. My sinuses are very clogged, which is why I live in San Francisco and not in Texas. Sorry, Texas, I love you, but your allergies just, I can't.
Sign X if you're on, we're open for sponsorship deals.
Yeah. Texas, get your shit together. Fix the air for Farah.
Please.
Yes, please.
Dan, tell us about yourself.
Hello, my name is Daniel Space. I'm the HR business partner of this Recruiter Love Triangle, and I'm coming from Charlotte, and I woke up an hour ago, and so it's a happy Friday so far. Mike, tell us about yourself.
My name is Mike. I never tell you where I'm from. I'm from Illinois, from my house as always. It's fun to watch Farah travel while she's talked to us the last few weeks, though, from 3 weeks, three different locations for Farah. I did not wake up an hour ago. I am always up at 5 a.m., but I'm glad to see you all sleeping in. I am in the talent and recruiting space. I never give myself a real intro. I always just dive into something that pissed me off. And that's because I'm not that interesting and I have nothing else to say about me. Nobody talked about donuts. We didn't have any today. We don't have donuts in our house, but we do have a lot of Milky Ways stashed away in a cabinet because our children are currently on the sticker chart system. And we let them go to like the dollar store and pick out a bunch of stuff that like, if you get enough stickers, you'll get this stuff each week. And one of the things they picked was like the 6-pack of mini Milky Ways each. So we came back with 12 of them. The good news for them is, as far as they know, there's really only one Milky Way each. So it has been slowly dwindling down. And I have been eating Milky Ways from home all week. And I am concerned they're going to fill their sticker charts and come to know Milky Ways soon. So Milky Way, we are open to sponsorship if you'd like to send us some more.
In your defense, Mike, I love Milky Way bars.
They're delicious. They're good.
So good. They're delicious.
They don't know. They just picked a random thing. Like, you can't just like leave 12 Milky Ways here for me and be like, yeah, in 3 weeks I might earn this and think I'm not going to eat them.
Yeah, no. Those are going to be gone by Tuesday.
Yeah. I will promise to go get more and forget and then deal with it when it happens.
Oh my God. Can I start with a little consumer story, please?
Please.
My brother and I are obviously in town for Persian New Year. We go to the grocery store and we go to the soda pop aisle and there's a drink that's called Starry. Do you guys know the story of Starry?
It's delicious. And by the way, happy Nowruz, but yeah, Starry's delicious.
You don't. Okay. So here's the deal. There was a TikToker by the name, and her handle was Sierra Mist. With a C, with an S. Well, guess who came after her? I don't know if it's Pepsi or Coke. I forget who actually owns Sierra Mist. And they sent her a cease and desist letter saying, you cannot use the name Sierra Mist because it's too much like our soda pop. Well, this smart woman was like, let me look into this. So she gets a lawyer. And it turns out that the company let the trademark expire and they never renewed it. So she went and got it. And her lawyer sent them a letter saying, we now own it. So they had to change Sierra Mist's name to Starry and get rid of all of it. Yeah, because of one TikToker.
I'm like, I love Starry, and I had no idea that was Sierra Mist. Oh my gosh, that is brilliant.
Oh my God. Yeah. In January 2023, Starry replaced Sierra Mist as Pepsi's lemon lime flavored drink.
Mm-hmm. That's
I had
right.
No idea.
Power of TikTok. This is why the government's trying to ban it.
Imagine now, was this person's so real dumb name Sierra Mist? Or it was just like their username. And
I think her first name really is Sierra with a C. Yeah,
I guess Mist is probably not the last name.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Can you imagine being so dumb at Pepsi to have the arrogance to send a copyright infringement lawyer and not check the dates and the validity of it? Like, I really hope that lawyer got a very stern talking to. I don't hope anyone gets fired in this economy, but that is just, maybe they should switch jobs. But like, I cannot imagine the arrogance and how that must have felt to send excuse me, we own this copyright letter, just to be told, actually, not only do you not, but now we have it for real. So now you have to change your drink name.
Yeah, I can only imagine they were just like, this person will just get very scared of this letter and go away forever. Like, I want. That's a great story, Farrah. I love it.
Yeah, I'm like, given Dan's love of beautifully sugary drinks, I was like, ooh, I need to like tell this story in case you guys don't know it. And I was going to send you like photos and stuff this week, because guys, we all have this. So for like whoever's listening, we always text each other, the three of us. And but I was like, no, I'm going to save it for the show.
Love it. And I like the fact that you just called my sugar addiction, that's probably pre-diabetic, beautiful. So thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Hey, I'm the one who talks about donuts all the time.
It's true. We love it.
Yes. The three of us are a mess with our sugar addictions and stealing candy from our children. We're
literally stealing candy from babies.
We're just three terrible people who get on here and claim that we're great as we try and tell people other stuff to do. Which, speaking of terrible people. I shouldn't say that. Speaking of people who we had run-ins with, Dan, whose new nickname on LinkedIn is a goddamn tornado of drama, which is where that came from in my intro. This week, you had some fun LinkedIn drama with someone very well known.
And two of them, in fact.
Two of them. We'd love to hear about your drama.
So I've also, just as a pre-warner, I've listened to a lot of podcasts over the last few days, and I ramble a lot. So I've put up a little timer. And the problem is also because we close our mics when one of us are talking, is that it really just sounds like I'm talking into the ether. Whereas if you see us, we're nodding and engaging with each other. And I've just used 14 of my allotted 60 seconds to explain that. Now I just
I'm afraid minutes. I'm going to ramble. So let me give you a really long pre-ramble before that ramble starts.
Exactly. I had two run-ins on LinkedIn. One is known as a very, very well-known resume voice, but many of us in recruiters and in HR just know her to be a really great storyteller versus the actual truth. There's a lot of repeated posts. There's a lot of hero stories. There's a lot of dear recruiter stories. And I had been reached out by someone and I had had to fix their resumes before. And I hate the idea of fixing someone else's resume because it means they have paid someone a lot of money for this. They got back something. It hasn't worked. And now they know it hasn't worked. So now they have to pay someone again. And so this is someone who I've sent at least 10 messages to over the last 2 years, is trying to be polite of saying, I keep having to fix your resumes. They're really beautiful. I know you think you're helping. You have a lot of followers who adore you. That's great. But it just sucks that I'm either doing it for free or I'm charging like 25 to 30% because I just feel like you're overcharging. And so I got to a point where I'd reached the 50th one or so of the resumes that I've had to correct from this person. And I made a post on LinkedIn. And in order to try to show the fact that I wasn't trying to bash them specifically, I bash one salty because I'll bash them left and right. I have no problem calling them scam artists. And I said, unfortunately, this person has, they have a huge following, really great voice, have a great reputation. Nothing against them personally, but here's the mistakes I see in the resume. And I focused on the resume mistakes. And I knew it, I have like, I'm 1/30th of this person's size. I didn't even think they would even notice it. I only got one of their followers, which I thought was great, but I got DMs from them. And the way that they thought the only reason I wrote the post was to generate business for myself. And I'm like, no, I'm actually an HR consultant primarily. So I can talk openly about resume coaches and LinkedIn career writers because it's not my primary source of income. I'm just concerned that you're more concerned about your feelings than about your disappointed customers. And they were like, oh, well, they actually said something really poetically beautiful. They're like, I bet you feel good wearing the valiant cloak of the protection as you sit behind the comfort of your computer. And I was like, what a great series of words to say. I don't want to take accountability for the fact my products suck. And then after that, they blocked me. And so I was very impressed that I gotten three messages in it before they blocked me, but it just was really disappointing. And it made me think, especially because between that post and now, I've now gotten 113 DMs and emails from people saying, I'm so glad you posted that. I spent $100, I spent $900, I spent $1,500, I spent almost $2,000 on a really crappy resume I had to fix. I had to hire someone else. It hasn't gotten anything. And I'm like, why? Like, it just sucks to feel that frustrated. Like, what do you do to someone who has a million followers and is beloved in that way?
Yeah, It's hard. I'm actually amazed you got like a message and that it even like turned into something. Like I saw that and I was just sort of like, okay, this isn't going to be anything. But yeah, it's hard. It's some people are kind of too big to fail in all sorts of business, and this is one. And I think that like resume writing's hard. Resume writing's a weird thing, and I think this is something we also struggle with. Anyone who's in this space struggles with, and you know. You can't promise anything when it comes to this kind of stuff. And I do want to give this person and any resume writer credit that no matter what you do, there are going to be groups of people who didn't find it successful because they still struggled on the job search and the content wasn't good enough or whatever it was. And like this job market's really hard. Any resume writer out there who says like, I 100% guarantee you're going to get a job using my resume is full of shit and like the worst scam artist. So you know, to their credit and to anyone's credit, there are going to be people who are unhappy no matter what. But there does reach a point of sort of like, do you care or are you dismissive and joking about them? Which it sort of sounds like right here.
That really was sort of my takeaway. Like I knew when she had sent me the note, I was like, okay, if I woke up and saw that, I wouldn't have been happy either. But the idea was so that this long page, and in that long page, they vaguely referenced an attorney. They were like, you know, sure, I could be someone that'll say I'm going to contact my lawyer, but that's not who I am. And I'm like, all right, well, you kind of are because you just said that. And then they ended the note saying, I'll leave it up to you whether or not you want to take down your post. I'm like, well, I'm not. But at no point did you say, hey, would you mind telling me which of my customers was not satisfied? I want to give them a refund. Or would you mind telling me what it was that you fixed? You know, if it's my reputation on the line is something like that, like I just keep thinking if the same thing happened to me in 6 months and someone tagged me specifically saying, I'm tired of fixing Daniel Space's resumes, I would be like, holy shit, what did I do wrong? I have a lot of refunds to make. Can we talk? Yeah, I wish you hadn't have posted me on that or dragged me out, but what did I do? And it's the lack of that I think was just really upsetting.
This is the reason that the three of us will always be the three of us and also not giant. And, you know, let's face it. There's the reason that this podcast has made 87 cents in revenue since we started it, despite all the costs that go in. And because there is something to it, right? Because you're like that and I'm the same way. If someone tags me or says something negatively about like me and the work that I did or something like that, I take it super personal. And I try to see why. Now, there's a difference when people come into like my TikTok videos and are like, this is bad advice. You're an idiot. That's different. If somebody feels like I ripped them off, which actually has never happened to me, then, you know, I would try to fix that. And I wouldn't just like be like, no, they're full of shit. And I can't believe anyone would say that. I think there's a difference. But that is also why I'll never have a million followers and, you know, be producing 6-7 figures worth of income out of this. I think there's something to that as well.
Well, not with that attitude.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I will give this person credit, though, Dan, the one that you're talking to, because I went to their LinkedIn profile and they have examples of resumes that they write. So they are being very clear about what they're advertising. So I will give them some credit. Now, you as a consumer, you're listening. What I would tell you is this. When you, because this is what popped into my head immediately. The top half of all of those resume examples, it was all fluff. It was a name, a title, a summary, a list of skills. Great communicator.
Which is resume writer 101. It's what they all do.
They all do the same BS. And it's not helpful. And I'm not saying I'm the best resume writer in the world, but I think to myself, if I only had half a page to give to a recruiter, what should that look like? What's going to be the most impactful? Because that's what the recruiter is going to pay the most attention to. So you as an educated consumer, think about that whenever you're writing a resume or any type of business document. That hopefully will help.
And I think that's such a great point, Farrah, and cheers as well. You know, I think the idea that they post their content, you know, to make it really visible definitely lends a sense of ownership to the consumer. The other, what I always tell consumers all the time, you never have to buy my products. You never have to buy any products of anyone that I give. But you owe it to yourself to do your due diligence. How does this person relate it to hiring? And this person admitted, and you know, in my post where I tagged them, I said, you know, this person may have started in HR. They haven't done it for more than 2 decades. They've opened up their own business. You know, no matter how good you think your services are, if you don't have the direct experience on the company side as it relates to hiring, how do you know how the ATS has evolved? How do you know how resumes have evolved? How do you know how like the recruiter response resumes and the hiring manager, how do you know all of this has evolved? How do you get access to the keywords and keyword phrases to these jobs and job families? companies. Like that's how I know my resumes are good. So you owe it to yourself, if you're thinking about this, to research the person. And it's not going to be I'm under the impression any resume provided by a company is not going to be good. Like you have to go to an individual and someone who has recruiting specific experience or HR specific experience or even hiring manager experience in your job family. I mean, those are going to be like your three best bets.
Yeah, like I use LinkedIn tools, which, you know, like I use LinkedIn Recruiter to guide me, to help me do research on what are some of these top candidates putting in their LinkedIn profiles and what are those key phrases that, you know, I need to include in LinkedIn profiles and potentially the resumes to get the, you know, a recruiter's attention or hiring manager's attention. Dan, you make a really good point about people being in the industry. I mean, I was laid off 6 months ago and that's when I started my business, but I still have a ton of connections to recruiters and I still advise founders. And one thing, and I've learned, like, here's the thing, when you have your ear to the ground or the nose to the ground or whatever, like I have heard, I'm not going to say which companies, but there are some very, very popular companies that are out there that are always in the news. They have such few recruiters, like they refuse to hire more recruiters. The hiring managers are now in the ATS. Doing their own recruiting, their own hiring. And they're not getting paid any extra. They're just, you know, they're basically doing two jobs. Have fun. I mean, have fun hiring managers, especially like, I'm just going to be a little, just have a little bit of beef. For those hiring managers out there who think that recruiters are stupid, recruiters just don't know how to do anything. Have fun with dealing with the ATS and doing your own hiring. Enjoy it.
I also want to like point out with this person, and I think this goes what we're saying, I don't think any of us would consider this person to be a scam artist, right? This is someone who maybe we disagree with their read. I think they are trying to provide work. And there is a difference between a lot of the scam artists and the scam resume writers out there and people who maybe are just sort of like not giving as good of a product as their name sort of is attached to at this point. So that's one worth pointing out, especially somebody who loves to DM and threaten, vaguely threaten a lawyer. This podcast makes no money. Leave us alone. So I would like to say just like another fun fact about this person, and you two know this. They were the first ever person I blocked on LinkedIn. About 7 or 8 years ago, I give this person credit for inventing what LinkedIn has become. This person realized a long time ago that if you tell a bunch of stories about running over a dog and being late to the interview because the dog, you helped the dog and then the dog was the dog of the CEO, I think they invented all of those stories. I think all of the copy and pastes come from there. And like 7 years ago, I was like, well, this is stupid. This isn't what LinkedIn should be. And I blocked this person, never knowing what LinkedIn would eventually become. So kudos to you for turning LinkedIn into this and for the large part that you had in it, which has done very well for you. Anyway, that was Dan's drama. I know we really wanted to spend some time and we went for a while, but we really wanted to spend some time talking about salary negotiation and compensation because it's something that's super important to Dan and to all of us, really. Yes. And I think we all sort of have some things on it. We had a video that we posted a few weeks ago where we said, like, it's not true that you can always negotiate. And of course, people came into the comments, like, of course, HR would say that because I'm universally here trying to save all companies all of their money. And all advice I'm giving is solely just to make sure that AT&T does not pay you as much money as possible, even though I am in no way affiliated with AT&T. It's a random company I picked for that example. Anyway,
I was going to say, so how about we do this? Not to cut you off. And AT&T, we're open to sponsorships. Let's do this. Why don't we go around and say, what is your favorite fake compensation myth? And what is your one hidden piece of advice that you're like, this is the thing that actually works? And I will go first because I have main character energy today. I think the biggest myth is the idea that the company wants to pay you as low as possible within the range. And this is like one of the biggest things that I just argue with people all the time. And I to a point, I understand why. But what I can't explain enough to everyone listening is if the company wanted to save money, they simply wouldn't open up your position. You have no idea how expensive you are. You can be anywhere to like 3 times to your salary. They're not looking to save like 15 grand. Like if they've opened up the position, they're willing to make that investment. And they know that people who feel like they're well compensated have higher engagement. So that would be like my biggest myth of, you know, if companies are not going to overpay you, but there's no vested interest in trying to underpay you or pay you as small as possible. My big secret tip is recruiters are your allies. I have seen so many wonderful candidates get like just a really great experience simply by saying to their recruiter, can you help me? Is this offer good? I feel a little bit lost. I feel a little bit uncomfortable. And the idea that recruiters are somehow out to screw you, that they get some sort of bonus, you know, by trying to underpay you, or that, you know, they work on behalf of the company, they work on behalf of the company, but their role is to fill you. And I just had so many wonderful examples of people saying, I trusted the recruiter. And I said, is this a good offer? And the recruiter saying, you know what? I think we can get you a little bit more. Let me go back for you.
It's such an important point. And it goes back to the joke I was saying about, like, of course, like they're saying, like, don't negotiate or they're always going to pay the lowest. Hiring managers and recruiters, right? This money isn't coming out of their wallet. As a hiring manager, I want the best person I can get for my team. And I said this in a video the other day, and a lot of people in the comments were like, no, you want the cheapest person you can get. And I was just like, why? Why would I want that for my team? I want the best person I can get. I'm not paying them. I don't open up the checkbook to pay this person. Now, maybe the company has set a very low budget. Like maybe that comes out of finance and all the things that kind of get involved. And yes, at that point, I want the best person I can get for that budget. But like, if it was up to me and I'm hiring for my team, I'll pay you $10 million a year because it's not mine and I want you to be here and be happy. And I just don't think people believe that because there are a lot of toxic and bad managers out there. And I think we've all come across them, but it's not some universal rule. It's just like, I don't give a shit what happens to a company's money, honestly. As long as it's open and like paying bills and like everything's good, like why do I, am I trying to save them $3,000? By just like tricking you into taking less.
I, as a recruiter, especially in big tech, this is more common in big tech. If there's a candidate that the hiring manager really wants and the candidate's like, hey, I think I deserve more. The recruiter's like, you know what? I think you do too. The hiring manager will usually say, yes, they do deserve more. They will write statements of support to finance and the HR business partners fighting for the candidate. Candidates never see these. Candidates, you don't see this. There's a lot going on behind the scenes. I've also personally written statements of support to help my hiring manager who like, hey, I don't have time. Can you help me write this? And then I'll add my two cents. I'm like, great, cool. Here's your statement of support for this candidate. I didn't have AI at the time. That would have been nice, but obviously can't put it personal information. But that's the thing. Like when it comes to negotiation, there's a lot of factors. There's a lot of people involved. There's finance, there's HR. You know, Dan knows because he's our HR expert, honorary recruiter, obviously, but like they have to make sure that they're being fair to everybody. So there's a lot going on, especially if a company really wants you. And to Mike's point, internal recruiters, which are recruiters that are hired directly by the company, we don't get paid any more or less if we give you more or less money. We don't get more or less bonuses if you get more or less money. I tell every single one of my candidates, I said, I don't care how much money you make. And then they give me a nervous laugh. They're like, what? I go, no, it has no impact on me. I don't care. My promise to you is I promise I will get you the best offer I possibly can. Because when you come to work, you're going to be super happy knowing that you didn't get screwed over, which means you're going to be happy. You're going to do your best work. My hiring manager will be super happy and you'll make the company money. Everybody's happy. Everybody wins.
Yeah. Like, you know what I don't want? A fucking difficult negotiation and you to decline an offer and me to have to start the search over. Like, what am I just like, ha 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 ha, I refuse to give them the extra $2,000 that I had available to me so that I could spend another 2 months doing this again. Like, I get it. I get people's mistrust of companies. Totally get it. But you also do have to listen to the people inside sometimes saying like, hey, let me connect some dots here for you. And yeah, I mean, that's just a great misconception.
And so I think one of the things that anytime we talk about salary negotiation, especially, everyone loves to say whoever says the first number loses. They use that as a way to counter the budget question. And I always say that makes sense in almost all cases. I totally get it. But it does not make sense for employment negotiations because the motivations are different. If a company has determined that a range for a position is going to be 1 to 140 and they ask you, what are your salary expectations? And you say 75, they're not going to pay you 75. They're going to say, oh, well, the absolute minimum we had was 100. You're probably going to get an offer anywhere between 110 to 120. So the company has no motivation to underpay you. And this is what I keep trying to tell people is that, you know, you sacrifice transparency because companies are not transparent yet. But the thing that you can take confidence in is that a company has got to be beholden to its own rules. Salary is extraordinarily protected information. It is very, very highly fined. A company has compensation analysts, managers, specialists that they invest money in to make sure that the company is doing all of this and has all of these calculations behind it. So as it relates to negotiation, just there's a lot of conventional methodologies that just do not apply.
Yeah. And it's not you versus them when negotiating an offer at a company, right? Because both sides of this negotiation want the exact same thing, which is you to work there and be happy working there. This is not a sales deal where one company is trying to like save extra money on the thing, right? This isn't a hostile takeover where someone's trying to like get some more. Like both of you want the same thing. And again, this comes back to the idea that whether you're negotiating with the recruiter or hiring manager or whoever else, it's not their fucking money. Like, they just, like, they're trying to get you in there and happy as well. And oftentimes we're like splitting hairs over like a few thousand dollars, which, not to be dismissive of it, right? A few thousand dollars can be a lot to a lot of people. But when you take this amount of money you're talking about, like that they're just trying to like screw you out of $3,000, and you break it over 26 paychecks and you take out taxes and all those other things, like, you're talking about nothing to these companies, like nothing at all. That's not what they're doing. That might just really be the best that they have for this based on, like you said, everything that's inside and everything that this company does. And like, it's just, it's hard because I just get the distrust people have. And I do think it's different when you're dealing with like a mom and pop owned company where they just run everything themselves versus like a corporation. Of course, that's different across different ways. But like, all they want is for you to work there and like stay long enough to be a good benefit for them and like everything sort of work well in the relationship. It's not you versus them.
Absolutely. So how about this? Because we didn't do my exercise now, because I took it all back. I took it all over again.
Still do it.
We just talked all about what Dan wanted the whole time.
But we can make it quick.
I'm the worst.
No, we can't. No,
how about this? like, what has been your worst compensation negotiation story? Like, has a candidate, as recruiters, has a candidate ever just like pushed the wrong button and potentially lost an offer?
Oh,
not
yeah.
Not lost an offer, but push a button. I'll let Mike start.
Yeah. So this person actually didn't lose the offer. And this is something that's sort of worth saying, that like, ultimately offers don't get lost that much. Now, this is an old market. Maybe today they do a little bit more. It can happen for sure. But I think the biggest issue is people who like treat it like a game because they've just heard like it's just like everyone's out to screw you.
Yeah.
I can tell one single story, which is, we had somebody who went through the interview, everybody was very happy with. And, you know, an offer came, and then they were like, oh, well, can we see this amount of money on the offer instead? And I was just like, hey, that's actually above the range. Like, we came into the top of the range. It was a real range. I can try. I can see. I have to get, like, finance to approve, et cetera. If I get it, like, we're good. And they say yes. And I go and I get it. And I come back. And, of course, like, well, now can it be this much? I'm like, listen, like, I told them this was it. Well, if you were able to dig that money up, can't you dig more money up? I'm like, this isn't the right way to go about this. But listen, again, because I still want to get this closed, because this is how it is, like, I will try it. I don't mean it to sound like a car salesperson, but like, that's what you're trying to turn me into here. And I go back, like, no, we can't raise money. So they come back and say, hey, that's the end of the salary. And it's like, okay, what about more equity? And I was like, okay, let's see about more equity. And then they were like, okay, what if we trade back some of the equity for like more money? And I was like, no, that's not how this works. You're not able to do this. I'm telling you, you're not as smart as you think you are right now. Like, now I'm starting to get a little frustrated too. And they said, okay, great. Well, let me go contact my financial lawyer to like talk through what like this equity could be worth. And I was like, why? It's not worth anything. This is funny money right now. Like, it's worth $0. There's no need for a lawyer at this point. It's amount of shares for the future. And then they came back and like, they're like, our lawyer wants to know if like, and like had some like lawyer question. And so we got this wrapped up, right? Ultimately, I wanted to take this offer away, but like, that's not what I'm going to do. But like, stop doing that to people. This wound up being just like the original offer with like the little bit of negotiation money on top that they got, which is certainly fine to ask for. But they pushed so many wrong buttons, rubbed so many people wrong, right? And then you start wrong. You start wrong with your new manager. You start with all these other things for nothing. And even if they had gotten it, you would have been again talking about 17 extra dollars a paycheck, you know, when you break it all down by everything. It's just like, if you say if you want a counter and you get what you asked for in the counter, be happy. Don't say that and then come back for more, right? Give your counter that you want, or shoot above it if you need to, but don't keep trying. It's just, it's not going to work for most people.
I will say the people that I have the worst experience with negotiating with are new grads or people who are very junior in their careers, because they don't know how negotiation works. And here I am explaining it to them and they think, well, I'm getting screwed over. One guy, I mean, he was almost having a panic attack on the phone. He goes, no, well, the way this works is that you make me an offer, then I counter and negotiate, and then you give me more money. And then when you give me more money, then I ask for more. And then we do this and that. And I go, sweetie, I can take this negotiation any way I want. And that shut him up real fast. He was just like, wait, what? And I go, listen, I'm the recruiter. I'm negotiating with you and I can choose to negotiate with you or actually not. Like, I actually have this power. So listen, I ended up hiring this guy who's really sweet, but it's like, okay, if I have to sit you down and educate you, fine. And then, you know, he's been with the company for years and he's great. The one that pushed my buttons the most was a woman who came to me and it was an awesome offer. It was the best offer I could give her. And she goes, I just don't like that the number's not a round number. Can you get me so it ends with like a 5 or 0. And she even said, I talked to my parents and my parents said it needs to be a round number.
And I said, 50 cents.
And 50 cents. I go, listen, I'm not doing that. She was like, what? I go, because if you do the math, like you guys were saying, it ends up being like a nominal amount increase per month. I've got you the best offer you could possibly get. Like, think about what you're asking. And they don't think that, like, and they think, well, I can negotiate everything from like, hey, can you pay for my cell phone bill? Well, if your job doesn't require you to use your cell phone, no, the company's not going to pay for it. I, as a recruiter, do need my cell phone. So yes, they're going to pay me a stipend every month for that. So like, Dan, I think you had a video years ago where you were like, somebody tried to negotiate like business cards or like some weird crap.
And I think what I always tell people is that you can always, well, I'm glad neither of you pulled the offer. I've seen offers pulled for less and I have seen companies. And when my rule of thumb is always, you could ask questions, don't give ultimatums, and listen to the cues that you're being given. And so I get all the time, you know, and of course I try to be as polite as possible. People are like, oh, you know, they gave me above the top of the range. And then they said that they gave me their best offer. Can I still negotiate? I'm like, what cue did you get that leads you to believe that that's going to be a good idea? And I remember someone lost a really great offer when I was at WebMD because he would not let go of $2,000. We had exercised every lever. And my whole rule book is go back to the well once, go back to the well twice with a lot of caution, but never go back a third time. And that's basically what he did. He negotiated really hard. And so we gave him everything he wanted, a little bit more. And then he wanted more. So we gave him just a tiny bit more, but made it very clear, this is our last offer. We can't do anything more. And he wrote back and said, you know, this is really great, but I think like the final offer is something like 188. And he's like, I would just really love if we can get to 190. And the head of the department pulled the offer. He was like, I'm done. See if the second person. And like the amount of emails he wrote after that saying, it's okay, you know, if you want to do 88, we'll do blah, blah, blah. And the guy was like, nope. In many cases, it's up to us to a certain degree. But if you push back, we keep having to go higher and higher, higher. And there's a potential point of an offer getting pulled.
I've had hiring managers want to pull offers, like, because they negotiate too hard. I've seen it happen. And I'm like, you know what? Let's maybe wait. Let me just have a talk with them. So I have saved offers because the candidate was pushing back too hard. And I was like, let me see what I can do.
There's a big part of it that goes back to just sort of like standing by your word, right? So if you say, okay, if you can get me a little bit more, get me to 188, then like we're good. And then they do, and you say, actually, how about more? Right? As a hiring manager, right, it shows a certain personality. It shows a certain like never enough, never kind of happy. And you might be listening and say, well, it's only $2,000. And you're right. But like Dan said, it's the third time. It's the several times saying, okay, if you can do this, I'll be happy, but then still not being happy. And I think that's dangerous. And the analogy I always use when we talk about negotiation is like, if you play any sports video games, like in your life, any Madden or anything like that, and you do like a franchise mode and you're like trying to trade players, like you always get like a trade that's like green, you can make this trade. And you're like, well, what if I add one more draft pick to this? Okay, it's red now, take it away. What if I add this instead? Okay, it's still green. Well, what if I add this? Like, and I think that's not how you negotiate in real life. That's not what you do, is just keep saying, can I add one more little thing? Can I add one more little thing? That is how you push people wrong. And I think most people would be pushed wrong if it happened to them too.
I will also say, reminder, people, this is March 2024 where we're recording this. So if you're listening into the future, we are in an employer's market. And I have seen TikToks where people have said, I tried to negotiate once, my offer got pulled.
Yep.
And that's because there may be somebody right behind you that they also wanted to make an offer to, but they were like, you were just like that much better than the other candidate. So they made the initial offer to you, but because you pushed back, I don't know how these people pushed back. So I'm not saying that they're at fault, but keep in mind, there could be somebody that is another candidate that if you push back the wrong way, or if you're making, you know, giving ultimatums, they're just going to say, eh, forget it. I know this person's going to accept the offer. Let me go to that person. So just be cautious and remember that just because someone's making an offer to you doesn't mean you are the only candidate that they can make an offer to.
Yeah.
You just raised such a great point that I wanted to reinforce. And I think, Mike, I'm sorry, I just cut you off. Sorry about that. But so like my last advice to everyone for this is I have not really seen a company pull an offer because someone negotiated, but rather that the negotiation was of concern. So as a perfect example, if the range that you're working with is 1 to 120, they make the offer at 115, then you know you come back and you say, well, what about 130? You are now above the stated range. And now if they're under the impression that if you join, you're not going to be happy and you're just going to be looking to leave for a place that pays 130 after you've sort of have said all along that you'd be happy at 115, then that becomes an area of concern. The other element that I always tell people when they negotiate is you have to be very, very self-aware of your role. And so I gave a perfect example where it sounded like I was being hypocritical, where I told one person not to negotiate and I told one person to, and I said it's because of the difference of their roles. One person was a program manager. Program manager at a FAANG company, great, but there's hundreds of other program managers. The other was an engineer who was certified in Azure, which is an extraordinarily difficult Microsoft cloud program that not a lot of people are really familiar with. That person had 4 offers. Like, yes, you negotiate that. So you have to be aware of how much your particular skill set is valued as it relates to what your confidence in negotiation is going to be.
Yeah, I think what we didn't get a ton into is like the idea of like what to do and how to do it well. We talked a lot about what not to do. And maybe there's a part 2 to this. And because I think we're sort of in interest of time, we can't. Because I think if I was listening to this, I would hear a lot of like, great, I know 100 ways to fuck this up, but not a way to actually get more money. So we do want to be clear that like there are good ways we can talk about that. But I think the big takeaway is like, it's so much more about the how than the what. And all of these stories we talked about were really bad hows. It's not that because they asked for more, it's how they went about it and went through the whole process. So I think we'll really spend an episode digging into like how to do better in the process and kind of get more out of that. That all said, before we wrap, let's get this. All right, let's get to the negotiation stage so we can ask for more money. The only way to do that is to ask the magic question. Dan, any hesitations about this episode?
Other than the fact that I think I paid too much time to me rambling now that I've rambled. But other than that, no, this was a lovely episode.
This was a lovely episode, and we all ramble. It's okay. Do other podcast hosts not ramble? Should we do better? Let us know in the comments. Farah, any hesitations about this episode?
No hesitations. I just want people to know that, you know, I know that on this podcast, we tend to rant a little bit, and it's because, you know, I feel like we're a good counter to all of the quote-unquote feel-good stuff that isn't really telling you the truth, and that's something the three of us all have in common is that we are not BSers. We're not going to tell you like everything is sunshine and roses and fairies. And if you lose a job offer or you get rejected, oh, you know, it wasn't right for you anyway. No, we're here to actually give you tangible advice. And I hope you had some great takeaways from today's episode. So
we are not here to make you feel good.
Yeah, we're here to make you good. You know what? We're like that teacher that you hate because they're so hard on you. And then you look back and you're like, dang, that teacher taught me a lot. That's how I look at us. Mike, do you have any hesitancies about this episode?
Other than the fact that I thought this was going to be like a 28-minute episode and we are now crossing into minute 40 of recording time, which is just so us. And I hope we don't get sued. Other than that, no. A wonderful time talking about negotiation. Dan,
that reminds me. I want to bring up a new topic. No, I'm kidding.
Do you guys want to get into like the best things you can do on a resume right now? Like some of our favorite resume stories. I think we're going to come back with more salary negotiation talk, especially how to do it well, rather than us just shitting on people's salary negotiation tactics. Really try and give you some beneficial advice sometime. Who knows? I don't know. We plan out these episodes like 3 minutes into them. So we'll figure it out. The rest, we will see y'all soon. Bye, everybody.
Bye, love.
Bye, everyone.